Old Testament reading today comes from the book of Exodus, chapter 34, verses 29 through 35. Let us listen to the word of the Lord. Moses came down from Mount Sinai. As he came down from the mountain with the two tablets of the covenant in his hand, Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone because he had been talking with God. When Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, the skin of his face was shining, and they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called to them, and Aaron and all the leaders of the congregation returned to him, and Moses spoke with them. Afterward, all the Israelites came near, and he gave them in commandment all that the Lord had spoken with him on Mount Sinai. When Moses had finished speaking with them, he put a veil on his face. But whenever Moses went in before the Lord to speak with him, he would take the veil off until he came out. And when he came out and told the Israelites what he had been commanded, the Israelites would see the face of Moses, that the skin of his face was shining, and Moses would put the veil on his face again until he went in to speak with him. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
New Testament passage today is from Luke chapter 9, verses 28 through 36. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. About 8 days later, Jesus took Peter, John, and James up on a mountain to pray. And as he was praying, the appearance of his face was transformed, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly, two men, Moses and Elijah, appeared and began talking with Jesus. They were glorious to see. And they were speaking about his exodus from this world, which was about to be fulfilled in Jerusalem. Peter and the others had fallen asleep, and when they woke up, they saw Jesus' glory and the two men standing with him. As Moses and Elijah were starting to leave, Peter, not even knowing what he was saying, blurted out, "Master, it's wonderful for us to be here. Let's make three shelters as memorials, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." But even as he was saying this, a cloud overshadowed them, and terror gripped them as the cloud covered them. Then a voice from the cloud said, "This is my son, my chosen one. Listen to him." When the voice finished, Jesus was there alone. They didn't tell anyone at the time what they had seen. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Funny story this past week. My grandparents had lived in paradise since before I was born. And my grandfather had died about 2 years ago, and my grandma died this past January. And we had the house cleaned out before the fire. And the only thing that was left was my grandpa had had this big safe in the garage, probably 5 feet tall, and it was an old school safe that I think I don't know how much it weighs. It wasn't moving, at least, which is why it was still there. And my grandpa had also failed to pass on the combination to the safe before he died, or tell us what was inside. So the safe had just been sitting in the garage, and the fire came through in November and burned the house down. The safe is still sitting right where it was. And so they started demolition on and cleanup on the property this last week, and I'm friends with the contractor who's doing the job, and he had an excavator out there and was like, "You want me to open the safe?" "Yeah, sure. Let's see what's inside." And so the safe was sitting on a concrete slab in the garage, and he just took the excavator and pounded the front of it 3 or 4 times, and it split the thing right open. Pretty fantastic all of a sudden to see. I mean, we'd been wondering. The family had had some discussions about, was it worth hiring somebody to try to get into the safe to see what Grandpa had in there? We're like, I don't know. He said he had some gold. It might be worth it. How much is it going to cost to get a proof? Anyway, the excavator was up there, cracked the thing right open. And, of course, incredible thrill of discovery. I mean, he's up there with a video camera watching the thing. Like, let's see what's in here, of course. Like, I can't wait to see what was worth putting inside the safe. And so as it opens up, and I love how everybody's totally focused on me right now. What's in the safe? We want to know what's inside. And of course, there were all sorts of treasures. There was an old family Bible. There was a whole collection of old Morgan silver dollars. There was a bunch of old coins. There was some silver. There was a bunch of, like, somebody had gotten him a subscription to, he likes to collect coins, to the U.S. Mint. You can get a brand, they'll send you a brand new pack of coins they make each year in a plastic envelope. He had those going back about 50 years. Those things are still worth at least 91 cents each. In the safe. Very safe. You can peel those apart and spend the quarters, and that's probably what they're worth. But he had some birth certificates and some old family pictures, but it was just fascinating getting to see what was inside, this microcosm of his life and what he valued. Of course, with a safe, it is, as with everything else, what is inside that matters most. These stories that we just read are very much stories about getting to see what is real and see what is really going on. The story of Moses on the mountain, I love. He's up there talking and communing with God, and this transforms how he appears to everyone else, right? Like Moses, by being with God, comes down and he is literally glowing. Maybe God's radioactive. But Moses comes down and people can tell that he has been with God. Kind of a cool metaphor for the rest of us, right? That this being with God should hopefully rub off on us a little bit. That Moses, in being and communing with God in God's glory, comes down the mountain and he is bearing God's glory. It is still a part of who he is. So much so that apparently the Israelites don't like it. Like, whoa, Moses, could you cover that up? And they actually ask Moses to put a veil on when he's talking to them so that God's glory isn't so in their faces. Those Israelites. This is actually such a deep part of the story that God, it says in Exodus 19, before God gives them the commandments, God shows up on Sinai in God's glory in this cloud. That's this passage talking about the cloud showing up and overshadowing Jesus is very rooted in these Old Testament passages of God showing up in God's glory on Mount Sinai, and God saying, I have chosen you Israelites, you slaves who I have led out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. I have chosen you to be a kingdom of priests. To step back to that, what do priests do? They commune with God and form an intermediary between God and the rest of the people, the world. So God calls the Israelites out of Egypt and says, I want you to be a kingdom of priests. As in all of you to be communing with me, to be seeing my glory and sharing that glory with the rest of the world. This was God's plan. Of course, the Israelites do the same thing they did with Moses. I mean, this was just before that. And they're like, wait a minute. That's scary. Moses, you go talk to God and then you tell us what he said. Oh, I mean, if I'm God, I've got to be a little disappointed with that. You guys don't want it, like, but I was going to give you myself, my glory, and you didn't want it, which is kind of what happened. Moses does this. Moses goes up and talks to God. It says he is in the cloud, in the glory, and comes back down, and the glory is on him, and they still don't even want to see that, right? Put on a veil. Cover it up. A little bit disappointing. Especially from God's perspective. But God, of course, does not stop giving God's glory to humans just because humans sometimes find it inconvenient or bright. God continues working and giving of God's self and revealing God. And of course, this culminates, I mean, it starts with Moses, and God continues to reveal himself through the prophets. And of course, we see it in this passage. The ultimate prophet from a Hebrew perspective was Elijah. He is the one who is representative most of God speaking through humans. And Elijah has this incredible experience, of course, in calling down God's glory in fire on the altar in front of everyone. And, and God speaking to Elijah and God doing powerful things through Elijah. And so when we get to this point where Jesus takes James and John and Peter up on the mountain to pray, to be together, and God's glory shows up, right? Peter and James and John get to see Jesus revealed as God. It says he is transformed. He's dazzling white. His face changed. He is sparkling. They get to see Jesus as Jesus is in reality, as God. And they are blown away by this. And then they get to see Moses and Elijah. They're talking with Jesus. Moses is, of course, the symbol of Torah. God gave the law. Elisha is the symbol of the prophets. The law, the prophets, Jesus, here together. And of course, Peter speaks up before knowing what to say. I just love that Peter gets included in these stories because there's hope for the rest of us, right? If Peter gets to be there, maybe we do too. And he says, let's make three tabernacles. This was, of course, the response to God's original glory, right? Moses comes down from the mountain and they make a tabernacle, the same word, let's make a tabernacle, and it will be the place where God's glory is housed. And if you remember anything about the original tabernacle, it was a place where God's glory would rest on the mercy seat, the Ark of the Covenant. And, of course, that would be covered, veiled, by the tabernacle itself, by a literal veil across the middle of that, so that when people came in, they were not exposed to God's glory. They would be behind a veil. Veil forms a very powerful motif running through these stories that often we as humans aren't maybe ready or prepared to see all of God's glory, or it might be something too transformative to see who God actually is and what he is doing. But Peter, James, and John get this experience. They get to see this theophany of, and this is very much like Moses seeing the burning bush, right? He gets exposed to the glory of God, to seeing who God is. That Peter, James, and John up on this mountain get to see God. They encounter Jesus. And I love, Peter says, let's build three tabernacles. That Peter wants to transform this into some sort of religious rite. And that he wants to, in some ways, veil it, institutionalize it, turn it into a program, a plate. Let us build a church here because this happened. And what does God do? Well, God shows up in the cloud. This is very much this... Any reader of this who is Hebrew is instantly, when the cloud descends, this is God's glory and presence. God shows up and says three things. One, this is my beloved son. Two, I lost my place. My chosen one. He is the chosen one, anointed would be another way of saying Messiah. He is the Christ, the one who is given to you. And three, this one I think might be most important, listen to him. He doesn't say worship him. He doesn't say build a church for him. He doesn't say form new religious rites around him. What God desires us to do with Jesus is to listen to him. That God has given us God's self in Jesus. Peter, James, and John get to see that. Jesus revealed as God, God's son, God's chosen one. And the very best thing we can possibly do is pay attention. To actually listen to what Jesus is calling us to what it means to follow him. Of course, the context of this, I love. A few verses earlier in chapter 9, Jesus puts this question to his disciples. Who do people say that I am? And, you know, they respond. Some people say you're a prophet. Some people say you're Elijah. Come back. And Jesus goes back to them, and some people say you're John the Baptist raised from the dead. But then Jesus drills it home even more closely. Who do you say that I am? Peter gets it right here. Blurting it out works well sometimes. You are the Messiah, the chosen one sent from God. Peter is willing to believe. He's willing to see Jesus as God. And I think that's a question Jesus, we all get to face. Who do we say Jesus is? Prophet? Or is he something more? Is he something, if he is God's son, if he is the chosen one, are we willing to listen? Are we willing to rearrange our lives, to let him transform us? Jesus says right after that, he says, the Son of Man must, Jesus warned his, this is verse 21, Jesus warned his disciples not to tell anyone who he was. The Son of Man must suffer many horrible things, he said. He will be rejected by the elders, the leading priests, and the teachers of religious law. He will be killed, but on the third day he will be raised from the dead. Then he said to them, if any of you wants to be my follower, you must turn from your selfish ways, take up your cross daily, and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it. This is the context of God stepping down and telling us as human beings, listen to this guy. What's this guy saying? that the way of following Jesus is very much one of, they're expecting Messiah to be the conqueror. They're looking for the new Caesar who's just on their team. But when Jesus reveals himself as Messiah to Peter, when Peter says, you're the Messiah, you're God's chosen one, Jesus says this is inextricable from him giving his life, from him being willing to love us to the extent that he would die for us. And then he says that what it means to follow him is us being willing precisely to do that same thing. If any of you want to be my followers, you too are called to live for something beyond yourself. To live to give yourself as a good gift to this world, just as God has given Jesus as God's good gift to us. This is what is going on when we talk about God's glory and seeing God's glory. The disciples have this idea in mind of this sparkling throne where everyone else is bowing down and worshiping. But when Jesus talks about the hour of his glory being here, his glory is precisely how much he loves us. He predicts, he says that his glory is being willing to die for us. Love that strong is, of course, what God's glory is. It is, of course, the glory you and I are also invited into. In Jesus, God is unveiling God, showing us what God is really like. When Jesus dies on the cross, the veil in the tabernacle is torn, top to bottom. God revealing God's self. The glory open for everyone to see. Jesus says it right before he dies, when I think is it Nathaniel? I can't remember. Says, just show us the Father and we'll be satisfied. Maybe it's Thomas. Says, show us the glory of the Father. Show us the Father and we'll be satisfied. And Jesus says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. In Jesus coming here, in Jesus giving his life for us, we see the glory of God. Just like Peter, James, and John got to see God's glory on that mountain, we too get to see God's glory in Jesus given for us. The Pauline passage for this week is 2 Corinthians 3, 8, 12 through 18. And it ends up with saying this, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is free... Well, the part before that, I got to give you this. Says that we with unveiled, who says Moses veiled his face when he came down off the mountain, but you and I shouldn't. We with unveiled faces are revealing the glory of the Lord. It says, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom, and all of us with unveiled faces, seeing the glory of the Lord as through reflection in a mirror, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory into another. For this comes from the Lord, the Spirit. Did you catch that? We are being we with unveiled faces who see God's glory, are being transformed by that glory into that glory. By seeing God just like Moses, right? Moses comes down from the mountain glowing with the glory of God. This is what we are each called to as well. We are called to look at Jesus, to see the glory of God's love for us, and see that that love is actually flowing through us as well. We are being transformed by glory from glory into glory for the world. That's what God's plan is. That's what he's doing with us, transforming us into our truest and best selves. So that when we come down from the mountain, as Peter, James, and John come down from the mountain, the next story is one, of course, of healing, of taking the demonic presences and banishing them, of bringing light into darkness, of bringing health and encouragement and belonging and connection. This is what God is up to in us. Glory. You bear the image of God. Every single one of you. That God is at work in you, bringing that image into sharper and clearer focus, calling it forth. Your face is called to shine with God's glory too, unveiled. What is inside you is what God is about transforming and changing and letting out. And I am so hopeful that the farther we go, the more God does this. That what we get reborn into in eternity is, of course, a body that matches our soul. that in heaven, our bodies will, of course, be better reflections of who God has actually made us to be. And in between now and then, we continue focusing on God's glory, looking at the love he has poured out for us that we might be transformed and in turn transform our world. Join me in singing our hymn as a response. Pass It On.